Today is August 17, 2026. This is your geopolitics briefing for Macro Observer. In the next 8 to 10 minutes, we'll cover Russia's refining collapse to its lowest output since March 2005, the battlefield stagnation that ISW says has slowed Russian advances by 94%, and a State Department ultimatum forcing roughly 35 countries to pick a side in the AI and critical minerals contest. Start with the number that matters most this week. 3.91 million barrels per day. That's Russian refining throughput in July, according to EA analytics data cited by the military show, a decline of 1.4 million barrels per day year-on-year, and the weakest showing since March of 2005. The strategic calculus here is straightforward. Ukraine isn't trying to retake ground meter by meter anymore, it's trying to bankrupt the machine that pays for the war. Bloomberg reporting cited by War and Politics 24 says Ukraine struck 11 of Russia's 34 major refineries in August alone, an escalation from 3 strikes back in 2022 to 138 last year. The consequences are showing up in daily life inside Russia. Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak, who insisted in July that things were stabilizing, has now admitted conditions in multiple regions are critically strained. Fuel rationing by license plate is in effect in Kaluga, and Astrakhan has capped drivers at 40 liters per vehicle. Moscow has responded by gutting its own fuel quality standards, allowing gasoline to revert from Euro 5 back to Euro 3, and reportedly weighing Euro 2 grade fuel, which has been banned domestically since 2013. More tellingly, Yandex search queries for how to make gasoline at home exceeded 17,000 in June, an informal but striking gauge of public strain. Building on that pressure, Ukrainian strikes also destroyed 7 of Russia's 10 largest Wildberries logistics facilities, with losses estimated between 215 and 280 billion rubles, or roughly $2.7 to $3.5 billion. Wildberries carries an estimated $6 to $7 billion in loans, mostly to VTB Bank, Russia's second largest lender. Oil and gas revenue, which makes up roughly 45% of the federal budget, fell 30% year-on-year in the first 5 months of the year. The military show frames this as the worst disruption since the fall of the Soviet Union, and the comparison to Allied bombing of Axis oil infrastructure in World War II feels apt. The goal in both cases isn't seizing territory, it's strangling the fuel that makes territory seizing possible. On the battlefield itself, the picture is one of grinding stagnation punctuated by disproportionate cost. ISW data shows Russia now needs roughly 16 days to capture the territory it seized in a single day back in June of 2024. In June of this year, Russia gained about 30 square kilometers at a cost of roughly 39,500 casualties, while Ukraine recovered 745 square kilometers in the Avdiivka direction alone by August, nearly 25 times Russia's entire monthly gain. Putin's claim of over 3,000 square kilometers captured this year is assessed by ISW at a real figure of 622. About 20% of the stated number. The shifting geography of power here isn't really about lines on a map moving forward or back, it's about the exchange rate collapsing. Roughly 95% of Russian casualties are now attributed to first-person view drones, and the cost asymmetry is staggering. A $250,000 Javelin missile against a $250 drone, a 1,000 times differential that's rewriting battlefield economics in real time. More importantly, Russia is opening fronts well beyond Ukraine. On August 14th, Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov rejected any ceasefire along the current line of contact, and Putin became the first sitting Russian president to visit Iturup in the southern Kurils, prompting Japan to summon Russia's ambassador and call the visit absolutely unacceptable. The strategic calculus here is multi-front pressure, contesting Japan over the Kurils, the EU over Shadow Fleet sanctions, and according to a New York Times report, potentially using Moldova as a destabilization vector and land corridor. Zelensky has said Russia has deployed or plans to deploy 30,000 to 50,000 North Korean personnel onto its own territory. There's also a genuine fracture opening between Washington's commercial interests and Kiev's war effort. Vice President J.D. Vance reportedly asked Zelensky to halt strikes on tankers and pipeline infrastructure at Novorossiysk, citing American commercial exposure through Chevron and ExxonMobil equity stakes. Ukraine agreed to a narrower commitment, then struck Novorossiysk anyway, damaging 2 frigates, a corvette, and disabling 2 grain terminals. Zelensky has said Ukraine holds only 1% of the Patriot Interceptor stockpile it actually needs. It needs roughly 5% just to survive winter and 10% to fully counter Russia's ballistic missile threat. That's close to a tenfold resupply gap that analyst Scott Lucas doesn't expect Washington to close given competing demands in the Pacific. Now to the piece that ties all of this into a longer-term contest, artificial intelligence and critical minerals as instruments of block formation. Chinese startup ZAI claims its open-source GLM 5.3 model scored 84.5% against Anthropic's restricted Mythos model at 83.8% on a vulnerability detection benchmark called CyberGym. But on Exploit Bench, which measures actually turning a vulnerability into a working exploit, GLM 5.3 scored just 54.4% against Mythos's 78%. These are self-reported, unverified figures, but the pattern, Chinese labs closing the gap on defense while lagging on offense, could shape very different export control debates depending on which half of that pipeline policymakers focus on. More importantly, a draft letter obtained by Reuters shows the State Department is pressuring roughly 35 signatories of a June AI cooperation statement, including the Pax Silica coalition of about 24 members, to choose exclusively between U.S.-aligned AI and semiconductor cooperation or competing frameworks. The letter's language is blunt. To be part of everything is to be part of nothing. The strategic calculus here echoes Cold War block alignment and prior semiconductor export controls, forcing allied and non-aligned states alike to pick an ecosystem. Kazakhstan is the only confirmed country sitting in both Pax Silica and China's rival WIKO framework, which makes it the most important bellwether to watch. Worth noting briefly, Anthropic's own risk disclosures reveal an unreleased, more powerful internal model called Model 2, and the company raised its internal misalignment risk estimate from very low to low, admitting its evaluation tools no longer fully capture increases in model capability. That's an industry-wide measurement problem, not just an Anthropic one. One more thread worth flagging. A UK-authored proposal, reported by The Telegraph, would extend a British nuclear guarantee to Ukraine, Norway, Switzerland, and the Western Balkans, tied explicitly to the UK regaining EU single market access lost since Brexit. The Centre for European Reform estimates UK exports to the EU have fallen 12% and imports 16% relative to a no-Brexit counterfactual. It's a striking attempt to partially restore the deterrent value Ukraine surrendered under the 1994 Budapest Memorandum when it handed back roughly 1,900 strategic warheads to Russia. So what to watch in the next 48 hours? Keep your eye on Novorossiysk. Ukraine struck it again, despite the narrower compliance agreement with Washington, and how the Trump administration characterizes that strike as a technical violation warranting suspended Patriot licensing cooperation, or as within the agreed terms, will signal whether U.S. commercial exposure in Russian energy infrastructure is now functioning as an actual constraint on Ukrainian operations, or just a rhetorical one. That single decision will tell us more about the durability of U.S.-Ukraine alignment than anything coming out of Brussels or Beijing this week. Stay vigilant. Until tomorrow. That's your core brief for today. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with more.